DW Africa Link.
Mali's story is one of deep contrasts. Some say the country is unraveling under the weight of political turmoil and rising violence, while others believe that life under military rule has brought a sense of order and hope. It's now 5 years after a military coup pledged to restore dignity and stability, but democracy is sidelined, political parties banned, and the promise of civilian rule is slipping away. So, what has happened to Mali's bold experiment with military governance? And where does this leave the future of a nation at the heart of West Africa's struggles? Today, we unravel the complex reality of Mali together. My name is George Okachi, and you're welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
I got a friend who just recently made an experimental trip to Bamako, Mali, because he believes the media sometimes does not paint the true picture of what is happening on the ground. Now, since the trip, he has told me a number of things, but one thing is for sure, the memories of initial optimism give way to uncertainty as everyday Malians face new challenges, from restricted freedoms in Bamako to ongoing violence in the north and center. Today, Mali stands at crossroads. The promises of stability remain unfulfilled, while political repression and foreign influences grow. To help us unpack this deepening crisis, I'm joined by DW correspondent Bram Posthumers, reporting from Bamako, and Rida Liamori of Policy Center for the New South in Rabat. He is also a senior West Africa and Lake Chad Basin researcher and advisor. Gentlemen, many thanks for your time. Bram, let me start with you. What does daily life look like for ordinary Malians 5 years into military rule?
Well, I can follow it from a distance because I am in Abidjan these days. But in any case, I've still got many, many contacts in various parts of the country. And what they tell me is that life is tough. It's not easy at all, both in terms of economic sense of the word. I mean, survival is pretty difficult. Was already hard at the best of times, and now has become even more difficult because there are sanctions in place, because economic life is coming to a standstill, because investors are staying away. There is obviously a pretty thriving gold sector, but that only benefits a limited number of people who are all connected to those in power. So on the whole, it's very much survival mode for most Malians. And on top of that, you have the whole issue of insecurity, which has been spreading, especially the last few months. Again, there have been new areas opened up by Islamic insurgents, especially those of the Group for the Aid of Islam and Muslims, the GNIM.
Rida, Bram paints a pretty grim picture, and we trust him since he's our main person on the ground. But there are Malians who actually think life has improved under military rule. In your research, you must be seeing these two very different realities. What's the real situation?
Well, I think the narrative remains the same as the same narrative that they used when they initially took power, is that the situation was really bad, insecurity, the economic situation also was getting worse to justify the coup and taking power. They maintained this narrative that we are the ones that deserve to be in power, and we are the ones that we are going to save Mali. We are going to save the Malians. But as Bram mentioned, that is not the case on the ground. It remains the situation, economic and insecurity, both situations continue to get worse. So I think the narrative remains the same, and we can say confidently that the political agenda remains that the priority is for the juntas to remain in power.
Well, the junta's main priority is clearly holding on to power. And we've seen this with General Assami Goita being given a 5-year renewable presidential term without elections. What does that mean for Mali's future?
This is not going to change anything. And we have seen this coming based on decisions that they have made. Initially, they said, we are going to transition maybe and organize elections in 2 or 3 years. And they continue to postpone it. And then eventually also, in addition to that, we have seen that the Goita and his fellow colleagues at the junta and the military leaders, they continue to silence and any individuals and political groups, even military leaders, that they speak against the juntas. And so this is, we have seen this coming, and this is not going to change. And this is something that they have been, the message that they have been sending for a while. So we have seen this coming, and it's just a continuity.
Bram Rida says this was all planned and won't change. But how have people reacted to the junta restricting political freedoms?
I would say mostly with indifference. It's been 5 years and a few days now, 5 years and 3 days. And the promised improvements have not come, have failed to materialize. So people are extremely disillusioned. And the other thing, and that is adding on to what Rina just said as well, the space not only for, you know, speaking out against the military in power or indeed criticizing them, but also the space for information gathering independent of those in power and the space for diffusing that information, those are all de facto illegal activities now. There is only one voice that is allowed, and that's the voice of the junta. All my colleagues who were in independent journalism, independent information gathering, have either left the country, exiled themselves, gone underground, or have auto-censored themselves to the extent that they've stopped being journalists. So that's also the information space that you are working in when you're inside Mali. And this gives people really only the impetus to shrug their shoulders and try to continue surviving and not paying a great deal of attention to whatever the junta is saying. Because as Rida also said, we saw this coming. This is not something that should surprise anyone. These guys are in it for the long run, and they will stay in power for as long as they like and as long as they can.
Well, they'll stay in power as long as they want. But Rida, I'm helplessly naive to ask this. Does Mali still have a chance at a democratic transition, or is that window closed?
Well, I think it's very optimistic to say that. I think we passed the idea that is going to be a democratic transition. These leaders, the junta leaders, showing no signs of trying to transition into a more democratic elected government, and they want to remain in power. And we will be very optimistic to say that we can see a change, unless some pressure or there is some desperate position from the current leaders, maybe pressure from international allies or the international community. If this situation continues to get worse in the country, I see them maybe making some desperate measures to please the international community so they can get some support from the international community. But otherwise, they are seeing democracy from their own lenses, and they claim that democracy in the world, in other places in the world, does not work in Mali. And as Brian mentioned it, I think we are here for a long run, and these current leaders are not willing to give up power and transition into a more democratic elected government anytime soon.
That sounds pretty pessimistic. Don't you see any hope in opposition leaders or movements that could challenge the junta?
There are credible leaders, and I'm sure you have heard about some arrests that have taken place in recent months about political leaders that the current juntas feel threatened by because they do have support among the Malians. This is not about just credible leaders, but also like just allow and give the opportunity to Malians themselves to choose who's going to lead them and give them that voice that is now being taken away from them. So it's there are leaders, but they are not in the position right now to speak. As Ron mentioned, they are either silenced, they have left the country, and they have given up on trying to speak up against the current juntas.
Well, gentlemen, I'll tell you, I was talking to a friend of mine who recently visited Bamako just to see for himself if the media is accurate. He said some people are actually optimistic about the military regime. Are there clear signs of support or resistance to the junta in Bamako or elsewhere, Bram?
Oh, there's absolutely no question about the fact that there is support for the junta, especially among the younger franges, the younger sections of the Malian population. And the reason for that is also very simple. There was a democratic experiment in Mali from 1991 until the coup 5 years ago, and that experiment has failed. It has failed to bring prosperity. It has failed to open up institutions for public scrutiny, as was promised. It has failed to bring security. Once the situation started degrading after 2012, when there was first the Tuareg insurgency, which was then taken over by the Islamist groups, mostly from Algeria, who then took over the north and spread to the rest of the country. And that all happened during the time when Mali was supposedly a democracy. So in that sense, you know, there is support, most definitely. What is happening now is that because the junta is failing to deliver, just like the system before it, the people are becoming more critical and saying, right, when is this security going to come? When is this prosperity going to come? That's not happening right now. So you see a repetition of tendencies.
Repeating all patterns seems to be the norm. But Rida, what does the junta's focus on sovereignty and anti-imperialism look like in practice?
Well, as Bram mentioned, I think that they were very savvy on coming up with the narrative that is going to resonate with the local population, especially that the situation was not getting any better. And this is not just to blame. Then we can say that the previous governments before the coup, along with the international community, kind of like made it easy for the juntas to create that narrative because the situation was not going anywhere. There was no clear strategy for Mali and for the Malian people on how Mali is going to go back to stability, how to be stable and how to not remain as corrupt. And I think the previous governments also had very major cases of corruption that gave this junta as a narrative that, look, those leaders were before us, we're just abusing power and they are corrupt. They were not looking after the Malians, but they were just exploiting their positions of power.
And what risk does Mali face politically, economically, and socially if this path continues?
Well, we are going to see increasingly, we're going to see unhappy people. When I say unhappy Malians, not just the civilians of the population, but we are most likely, if the security situation continues to get worse, we are going to see unhappy military officers that continue to suffer major losses against GNM as well as against the FLA, the Front Liberation of Azawad, and if we look at the history, you know, to lead into the coups. It's mostly when these military officers are not happy with the situation that eventually leads to a coup. So, you know, I'm going to try to stop short from saying that most likely we are going to see another coup eventually, but we are going to see unhappy people, and how these people are going to demonstrate their dissatisfaction with the current leaders, it remains to be seen. But again, I'm pessimistic on how this is going to end, and especially with the current trajectory, not just at the political level, but also in security, as it continues to expand beyond traditional regions of northern and central Mali.
So, Bram, insecurity and economic troubles are the biggest issues. Now, if Malians could solve one problem first, what do you think they would choose?
If they were in the position to exert any pressure on the junta, and we know that we are dealing with a junta that is impervious to any pressure from both inside and outside Mali, it is susceptible to internal problems, of which there are a few. But what people's priorities obviously are going to be are very, very straightforward things. They want insecurity to end. They want to be able to go about their business in security and without harassment by corrupt officers, whether representatives of government, be they police officers or army personnel. And they'd like to have some economic perspective. So those are very simple and straightforward things. And neither the previous governments nor the current military government are delivering any of those things.
Let us now shift to junta's foreign policy. Some say they are turned towards Russia and China, and distancing from the regional groups like ECOWAS is troubling. What benefits does Mali get from this?
This shift is just sending a message to the international community saying we want to work with whoever we want to work with, and we are going to work with the partners that are not going to meddle into our internal affairs. So that is the advantage that collaborating with Russia gives them, and because Russia does not intervene in their domestic politics. And the same thing for China, and although China is involved more economically in the economic investment, but it remains limited still in Mali compared to other African countries, like the Chinese investment in Mali. So we have seen this shift, and the international community right now is struggling into like how to maintain at least some sort of like dialogue with the Malians, with the Malian juntas, and not to completely cut off communication with them, because I see eventually, you know, to answer your question, like in the future, I do see some engagement from Western allies, because France, the U.S., they want to maintain a foot and then, you know, or a hand in Mali and not totally abandon them, because for the good of the Malians, and also what France and Mali have invested in the country. So they want to maintain some sort of dialogue that eventually, so they can eventually rebuild a good relationship with Mali.
Bram, with new allies like Wagner involved, how has security situation changed?
Interestingly, I just had a chat with one of the people who was running for president in Cote d'Ivoire, and you may recall that Mali has had a particularly prickly relationship with Cote d'Ivoire since the junta came to power. You know, there is not only the history of the Ivorian peacekeepers who were kept hostage by the Bamako junta because they wanted a few high-flying Malian politicians and luminaries who had been setting up shop in Abidjan. So that was one aspect of it. But the candidate told me that, listen, there is absolutely no way that we can disengage from a country that we share a very long border with, which is geographically also related to the north of our country. And let's not forget that there are millions and millions of people from the Sahel all working in Côte d'Ivoire and making money and sending it home. So there is no question of severing ties with Mali, even if it is now formally outside the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, and has set up its own unit, the AES.
Well, gentlemen, our listener might come away from this podcast feeling pessimistic about Bamako. Rida, is there really no hope at all?
No, it's not. I mean, of course, it's pessimistic because when we look at the decisions that have been made to continue avoiding and blocking transition into a democratic government situation, and also looking at the insecurity, I think that's why we are pessimistic. But at the same time, we do, as I mentioned earlier, we do have to remain optimistic and for the international community. We encourage the international community not to cut complete ties with Mali and remain some sort of dialogue and engage in dialogue in order to find a common ground that is going to help Mali come out of this situation, because the in addition to the insecurity and economic situation, I think the humanitarian conditions in the country continue to get worse, and we are seeing more displaced population, especially from central parts of the country towards Mauritania, as well as towards the urban centers in Mali itself. And with the departure of most of the international humanitarian actors, and the resources became very limited. So we do have to maintain some dialogue and channel and remain, have some optimism that eventually some common ground would be found between the Malian current leaders with the international community to come up with the solution for the benefit of the Malians.
And finally, to you, Bram, many thought Gabon's transition might inspire other coup-led countries. Do you think a model like this could work in Mali?
No, I don't think that Gabon can actually serve as an example for at least two different reasons. The first is that, obviously, both geographically and politically, Gabon comes from a completely different history as compared to Mali. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that the person who took over in Mali, Brice Nguema, actually belongs to the same political military class. Remember, he was the chief of the presidential guard of the president he deposed. So it is difficult to see how there is any such model available. Mali is going to and has a history of inventing its own systems of governments and its own ways of dealing with difficult situations. And there's no doubt they will do this again. So in that sense, if you talk about being optimistic or pessimistic, I think it's also a case of just witnessing and regarding what's happening in Mali and realizing that no situation is static. I mean, we're not dealing with a solid block of military who are holding on to power for themselves, opposed by a solid block of the population. The picture is much more nuanced and much more complicated. And as we already mentioned very briefly, there are already divisions inside the junta which is running Mali. So let's keep an eye on the actual developments happening on the ground and at the same time being very realistic that we are not out of the woods in any way and that this situation will persist for the foreseeable future.
And for you, Rita?
And now, as I'm just to conclude, and that we have to keep an eye very closely on what it's happening internally and beyond the insecurity. I think the developments among the juntas and among the political leaders is something to watch, and how long is going to take before someone or is going to react internally, because when it's going to enough is going to be enough.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
What we've heard today paints a sobering picture of Mali's political reality. one where promises of reform have given way to repression and where the future remains uncertain. But it also reminds us that Mali's story isn't over. Civil society, regional actors, and ordinary citizens still have a role to play in shaping what comes next, whether through advocacy, activism, or voting, if that will ever happen. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Can Mali find its way back to democracy, or is military rule here to stay? Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and subscribe to Africa Link on Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is George Okachi, and thank you for listening to Africa Link, where we bring you the stories that matter.
DW, made for minds.